97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Weekend to you. Hope everybody's having a great day, and welcome into Second Amendment Radio, the great outdoors. We got a lot to get to today. We do. Bo Matthews in here along with me and Carl Middleman.
Pew, pew. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
Yeah, no kidding. I will. We're going to talk to somebody, to two people today who had success deer hunting. I will not be one of them, Bo.
And I'm definitely not one of them either. We had to get these people on the phone from wherever they were. So looking forward to it. I always hear, you know, deer hunting stories are kind of like fish stories. There's a lot of similarities. There's maybe a little bit more truth in a deer story, but we'll find out.
Well, you got to have proof at the end of the day with the deer because you got to have a picture with it, right?
Yeah, but there's those ones that got away.
Oh, I see.
You know.
Yeah, but you don't want to admit that because that means you missed. Yeah, that I'm just saying.
Do you want to say who these people are?
Well, you know both of them pretty well. One of them is a Major League Baseball star for the St. Louis Cardinals.
Oh.
Adam Wainwright.
And a good guy with a good heart.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. He really is.
We were supposed to talk to him earlier, but he was doing something for
his
church.
He's been delayed, right? So we're going to get to Adam here coming up before too long. And then I've determined that the name Mark, if it's spelled with a C, is apparently an old Indian word for bad hunter, because my name is spelled with a C, and I didn't get a deer this year. But Mark Reardon, who spells his name with a K, did have success. And if you listen to his show on 97.1, you all know Mark. He did well this year.
And like a good fish story, I think he's saying to everybody that he got the 30-pointer. We don't know.
Yeah.
Is there one out there?
Yeah, we're going to get to that here coming up shortly.
All right, I came across this story, and I sent it to you guys, and lo and behold, Carl with a C. Now,
yes.
There's Carl with a C and Carl with a K.
Yeah.
Carl with a C means great producer.
Thank you.
Because he tracked down the author of this study. A new Rutgers study has found that people who bought firearms during the COVID-19 pandemic and national surge in firearm sales tend to be more sensitive to threats and have less emotional and impulse control. So I just said, hey, let's talk about this. You did one step better.
I found the guy who wrote it.
You found the guy. So let's welcome into the conversation. He is New Jersey Gun Violence Research Center, Michael Deonestis. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
So what brought the idea of doing this study up that you wanted to go after?
Sure. So we've been doing a decent amount of work lately, our crew, just trying to better understand this, you know, firearm purchasing surge, and are the folks who are driving this surge sort of different in any way than typical firearm owners or non-firearm owners, just because, you know, it's pretty important to know when you see a big trend in something. And a big sort of glaring hole in the research on firearms in general is just kind of understanding who people are beyond their demographics and how that influences. So we know, you know, men are more likely to purchase firearms than women. We know folks who live in more rural environments are more likely than folks who live in more urban environments, right? But we don't know much about who someone is sort of characterologically. And that can be important because that can tell you about all sorts of other things that they do in their life. And that can inform us in terms of how to keep people safe. So we were trying to take a first step, a preliminary step, to understand, based on some data we have, are these folks different in any meaningful way that would be informative?
Okay. I let me jump in here, Michael. Michael Anestis, our guest on this study. You surveyed 3,500 adults in the United States. The first thing that stood out to me was they, for whatever reason, they bought a firearm, maybe for the first time last year, but they are law-abiding gun owners, yes?
Yeah. So this is not a study about criminality. This is not a study about illicit firearm access, which is a super important question, right? But not something that's easy to get at. That's something we're working on in another project. But yeah, this would be folks presumably who purchased their firearms sort of legally. I don't know about their criminal record in general, but they weren't recruited on the basis of some sort of crime related or unrelated to firearms.
Okay.
Yeah. So what were the initial findings here that somehow people are I have to tell you, you know where I'm coming from on this. I'm pro Second Amendment guy. When I read the headline, I'm thinking, well, it sounds to me like they're saying the people that ran out and bought firearms are just paranoid and they're, you know, they live in fear all the time. What's your perception of your conclusion here?
Yeah, sure. So definitely not that. I do think we've got some pretty compelling, and understandable. Yeah. So the goal isn't to label folks or anything like that. And in fact, you can take our findings and say we're labeling non-firearm owners, just the same way, right? Like that's not the idea. The idea isn't to look at the extremes and say, well, if you score higher on this, that means you're paranoid, or that any decision you make is unrelated to actual threats. Not at all. So what these variables mean, and the trick with these sort of personality variables is that they use a lot of jargon, and it's hard to explain them in one sentence. And so it ends up feeling very convoluted, right? So the most straightforward way I can say it is that the folks who were purchasing during this surge were different than most firearm owners, and not everybody who purchased during the surge. On average, the people who purchased during the surge were different than other firearm owners and folks who don't own firearms at all, on the basis that when you ask them about their sort of how they respond to emotions and threats, they tend to be more likely to make sort of quick decisions in response to negative emotions. And they tend to see or to be more reactive when they feel stress. So it's not necessarily that they feel stress more often, but when they feel it, that's a bigger deal to them. So they're perceiving the world, when they perceive the world as threatful, that's going to cause a bigger reaction from them. And they have a tendency to not have the brake pedal as much as other folks. Now, again, that doesn't mean that's how everybody is. And another important point to keep in mind is the effects were not huge, right? So significant doesn't mean massive. So the idea isn't that all folks who purchased during the surge are paranoid folks who made an irrational decision and it's a huge difference. No, it's just saying that you can see a difference in how folks respond to stress. And you're seeing it more here, and it's different than what you usually see in firearm owners. And here's why that's a big deal. And I know it's a rambling answer, and I apologize, but we put out another study a couple of weeks ago, and this is the second time we found this, is that the folks who purchased during this firearm surge, and in this other data, we actually could say, particularly folks who purchased their first ever firearm, were more likely than other gun owners and more likely than non-gun owners to have had suicidal thoughts. And so what we're finding is that these are unprecedented times the last 18 months. And we also saw unprecedented sales in firearms, and that there's some evidence that the folks who are making up that population of folks who've been purchasing firearms during the last year and a half, they're a little different than usual. And that's just important to keep in mind, because if you do have a group of new firearm owners who are a little bit more reactive to stress, who do have more of a history of having suicidal thoughts, and they're new firearm owners, then, man, do we need to talk to them about how to be safe with a firearm.
Well,
otherwise, there's just too much risk.
And hopefully we are, Michael. And what I would say there is that, for some real life experience in this, I've got a local gun range here who's a sponsor on my show, the Range St. Louis West. I talk to those guys all the time. They told me that probably 40%, now they had a record year last year, like many gun stores, probably 40% of their buyers were new gun owners. People who I don't know if it's that they had less emotional or impulse control, but people who for some reason, maybe they watched the riots in the streets in Portland or wherever it was around the country in the last year and a half, felt that they needed to do something to take a measure of protection for themselves.
Yeah.
I mean, did you find anything? I mean, did anything in there? Were there questions specific to that? That's not so much lack of impulse control as actively choosing to be able to defend yourself in the event that your police organization gets defunded.
Yeah, so I can say sort of two things. One is that 40% number is also sort of dead on with what we found and really consistent with the NSSF, the National Shooting Sports Foundation, put out. So that's a number that's popping up pretty common. It's about 40% of folks are first-time firearm owners. So that's bigger than what you usually see in any other given year, right? So that I think we can all agree on. I did ask some questions, and I asked them in two different ways about why people were purchasing. And so in every survey we do, including things that predated the surge, we ask folks just in general, hey, what are your primary reasons for purchasing a firearm? And universally, and that's true in this case, folks say protection at or away from home, particularly at home, right? So I purchased to keep myself and my family safe in my home should something, someone try to break in. So always the most common reason. But this time, what we did a little differently that I think is more what you're getting at is we asked about things that were going on in the world. So things like COVID-19, the concerns about supply chains, concerns about societal breakdown and the need to sort of protect yourself in case, again, law enforcement doesn't have that. And what we found is that the folks who purchased during the surge who purchased for the very first time, the thing they endorsed the most often was this vague sense that I purchased it in response to sort of COVID-19 and all the stress in the world. So not some specific physical threat, but they were driven more by this, the world, something's going on in the world right now, and I need to do something to provide some safety. Whereas the folks who'd already owned firearms and they just happened to buy more firearms this past year, not necessarily any different than any other year, it was really more the supply chain concerns in particular. So it's just inventory's down, I got to buy now. And then they endorsed that, hey, I'm not sure the police have this at this moment for whatever reason. And so I'm going to make sure that I sort of further the degree to which I've got control over this. So I totally agree with you that the idea isn't that people are buying. When you say lack of impulse control, I think a lot of times we think that means something that different means. It just means, in this case, look, when I get stressed, I tend to make decisions differently than I do when I'm not distressed. And that's true for everybody, but it's particularly true for some folks. And if you're feeling threatened, the thing you might do is make a different purchasing decision than the other would. And I'm not putting a value label on whether or not they should purchase a firearm.
Well,
simply,
Michael,
they made a decision.
People also, you know, stocked up on toilet paper because they were freaking out.
Oh, yeah, for and sure. So it would be great if we asked that, you know?
Yeah.
And out of your research of the 3,500 adults, do you know how many were first-time gun buyers?
So in this survey, unfortunately, we don't. We did a follow-up survey this next year, and now I do know that.
Okay.
So for that, I can't speak to that here, and I wish I could.
No,
we could replicate these findings, but sadly, I just don't know.
No, we can come back to that. But I mean, the whole world is vibrating with this influx of tension and uncertainty and all this. So from your findings, though, how do you feel about people protecting them? Or do you feel like you're in more danger because of the people that, you know, you claim, don't have control over their emotions?
Yeah. Well, again, I don't know that I say I claim that they don't have control over their emotions. But what I feel is that when folks who have a harder time making the same decisions they do when they're calm and they're upset, when those folks have a firearm at home, if they are also folks, because that type of tendencies also tends to be an increased risk for having had thoughts of suicide and things like that. My concern is that they aren't safe unless they are getting a good amount of information about how to store their firearm safely, about where they can safely and legally and voluntarily store away from home if they're having a hard time. That's my concern.
Okay.
So my concern isn't about guns are bad and this is bad. My concern is a lot of folks I'm concerned are vibrating, like you said,
for the mental health, on the mental health spectrum.
Yeah. Yes, and they're having a hard time, and they're not telling anyone about it.
But look what the news agencies are pumping.
They don't know how to be safe with it.
But look what our news agencies are pumping into us. I mean, every single day, you know, and just the violence, the riots. We had Mark McCloskey here. You know, he had 200 people walk by his house, and they weren't walking the dog. They were chanting. They were saying stuff to him. They were freaking him out. And he stood out there with his AR and, you know, like, stand ground, get off my grass. And I know that nobody stepped onto his property proper. But I mean, I don't know anybody that would have acted much different if they were threatening your home, coming in your home. So that is a guy that was in. He had self-control, in my opinion. And I don't know, but it's interesting that you are digging into this to find out. Somebody with a short fuse, probably, you know, I know several people that just, boom, their fuse is done. They get mad about road rage, whatever. It can happen so quickly. Should they own a firearm or not? I don't know, but I think most gun owners that I know are responsible. They are doing the training. They are, you know, cleaning their weapons. So interesting information that you've got.
Yeah. Michael Anestis, thank you for your time this morning.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys.
Absolutely. Again, that study out of Rutgers, good conversation there.
Yeah, and we really want to invite him back, I think, when he gets more studies concerning Second Amendment, if you don't mind, Michael.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, I'd love to do that. Here's a question I'd like to ask, not just to Michael, but just in general, if you're going to study things like this. For the people that feel that they need to go down to their local town square and exercise their First Amendment right?
Sure.
Should we study whether or not they're less likely to have impulse control or weak emotions? I mean, no, we don't ask those questions about the First Amendment, But we're also always asking those questions about our Second Amendment rights.
Yeah.
There are issues there.
There's another study, and maybe we email him and ask him to do this, but maybe there's a survey of violent offenders with firearms that are incarcerated, whether they're waiting for a trial or whether they're, you know, sentenced and doing their time. I guarantee you, most of them, I can't guarantee anything. I would think that most of them would think the reason that they had a gun and they were doing what they were doing with that gun was for survival. So how different is that for a law-abiding gun owner?
Right.
About survival when you're seeing what you're seeing on TV.
Could not agree more.
Okay.
Coming up on Second Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors, Mark.
M-A-R-K.
M-A-R-K. Great deer hunter, apparently. We're going to find out his experience. He got a nice one this past weekend.
We'll talk to him next.
The 30-point buck.
30-point buck.
30-point buck. 30-point buck.
30-point buck. 30-point buck. 30-point buck.
The
Did you see the 30-pointer?
Did you see the 30-pointer?
Yeah.
Did you see the 30-pointer?
Did you see the 30-pointer?
As we jumped into the truck, then I'm going
to
get there.
It is Second Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors. This segment brought to you by Razorback Armory, Second Amendment supporters, gun enthusiasts. There's big deals going on at Razorback for the holiday shopping. They're going to have a start on Wednesday. They'll be, of course, closed on Thanksgiving, but back open with Black Friday specials and all weekend long. To find out about those deals on ammo and weapons and all the free goodies they're going to be giving out, go to RazorbackArmory.com. They're right there in De Pere. Razorback Armory is your gun concierge.
That is a Black Friday sale I can embrace.
I'm just telling you. Tell Santa Claus that, buddy.
Exactly. Yeah, glad you're back. You know, I, like a lot of you listening, I spent quite a bit of time in a tree stand last weekend. Can you say that?
Yeah.
And I have, unlike our guest, nothing to show for it. Mark Reardon is joining us right now, of course, host of the Mark Reardon Show, 3 to 6 here on the radio station, Monday through Friday. Mark, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
I'm doing all right. I'm a little jealous.
Mark is jealous of
you. I'm bitter. I've decided that Mark, spelled with a C, is actually an old Indian word for bad hunter, because I didn't even see a deer.
No way. You didn't even see anything?
Nothing.
Yeah, that gets frustrating. I mean, look, I've done this for several decades now, and I saw something come up on Facebook Memories last weekend after I did get a deer that said it was like from maybe 15 years ago, and I wrote something about how I was skunked for only the second time in all these years. I've been skunked, but it's been a while. But that gets frustrating when you're not even seeing activity. I get it.
It's sad that Mark Cox and I have something in common, because I'm married to a vegetarian, so I don't hunt out of respect for her. But we both got the same amount of deer last weekend.
Yeah, but you didn't try.
Thanks, Bo. Thanks. Rub it in, please.
But the cool temperatures are back. But let's talk about you, Mr. Reardon.
Well, that's my favorite topic, so absolutely.
So where were you hunting, Mark?
Well, I started hunting many, many years ago. I think it was the early 1990s. There was a guy in Columbia that I became very close friends with, my hunting and fishing mentor, Kevin Yeager, and he very generously grandfathered me into a deer camp in Howard County, Missouri, which is near Fayette and Harrisburg, that he and some other friends have been hunting on for a while. And I was like the last person in that wasn't a coworker, a family member, actually. So I've gone there. Even when I lived in Wisconsin for 10 years, I hunted in Wisconsin too, but Missouri's deer season was, you know, always earlier. So that's where I go. It's sort of north of Columbia. We have about 300 acres and, I don't know, about 10 to 12 hunters on all that land. We have the kids go out. You know, my daughter didn't go out this time, but the kids go out in some of the stands. We do have some that would be described as deer condos, just so you know. They're very
I'll bet. Yeah.
Rich people problems.
No indoor plumbing, but, you know, they're pretty nice stands. And those really are for the kids. But, wow, we had a really amazing weekend. Now, we have a policy that was implemented about 4 or 5 years ago that seems to have worked. So we used to, and, you know, in some parts of the state, you can get these bonus tags. We could shoot many, many deer. Does and bucks, you know, you get your one buck with your tag. But Kevin implemented a policy of no does years ago. I mean, if someone comes on for a youth hunt or if there's a kid, then that's certainly something that we'll do. But for the most part, we don't kill does for a couple of reasons. One, people were shooting button bucks, and, you know, that's not good, accidentally, the young ones. And then the does have more babies. So this seemingly has worked out well. We had a really, really good group of bucks last weekend, including mine.
Now, do you use like the DeerCast technology? Tim Chelsvik is a guest on our show often. It's the technology that like maps out the weather and sightings and things like that.
Oh, dear Lord, no. I go into my deer stand on Saturday morning at about 5:30. I sit there. I wait for the sun to come up, and then I got deer all around me. I mean, I have a great spot. I got to tell you, I saw so much activity last year. I don't think I've ever seen so much activity. We hit the rut so perfectly well. But we really leave the property very quiet for the weeks leading up to deer camp. We know that there's deer everywhere. We kind of know the trails a bit. You know, the stands are very properly placed. So there's not a whole lot of technology outside of cell phones in the stand when we hear a shot to say, hey, was that you? That's pretty much the technology that we use.
I can't wait to have our friend Tim on again, because I'm going to ask him if somebody has signed up for that service named John Deere. I think the deer on our property get the deer cast, and they know the days to kind of lay low. Honestly, because it was bright green when I was out there Saturday, and I didn't see a deer. So, you know, what do you do? You can't figure that out. So how big was your deer, Mark?
Well, you know, here's the story of my hunting career is that I don't end up being very patient, even when I tell myself I'm going to be patient. Now, look, I would shoot a doe for the meat. I don't have a problem, but, you know, my friend has the policy. So we try to wait and not, you know, shoot small bucks. And I'm not looking for a wall hanger. I really do want the meat. But I had a buck that was crawling through the woods. I started seeing activity last weekend about 7:30, about 8 o'clock. This buck comes around. I had him. I didn't even pick up my gun. I swear. I just looked in the binoculars. I'm like, well, that's okay. But you know what? I think I'm going to wait. Well, he kind of wandered around, and there had been a doe that had come through, and he was definitely on the trail for the doe, and then sort of walked right by me. And you know, it was an obligation at that point. So not a monster buck, but it was technically, I guess, 11 points. He had a weird brow tine, and you know, not the best genetics. It was an older deer, not the best, you know, buck of the weekend. But again, I've got several on the wall that are kind of hidden back here in my unfinished part of the basement, so nobody can see him anyway. And I don't really need, my wife, that's my wife. I'm looking for, you know, I'd like to have like a cabin at some point where I can put those things. It doesn't really go with the decor of the house, if you will, you know. So, but it was successful, and I was very happy about it, and we had a great deer camp in 2021.
I've got one of those. A wife that doesn't want my fish or my deer hanging on the wall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
she, I know. She gets a she shed. You need a he shed.
I know. I do. Absolutely.
Becky doesn't say you can't have them up, but I mean, I've joked about putting it in the master bedroom, and you know that's simply not going to happen. But you know, if there's decor where it fits, and then it's proper. So I'll get there. I'll get there sometime.
Good for you, Rune. I'm happy for you, man. I saw a 10-pointer in my neighborhood driving to my deer stand.
Well, you know, I will say, and I'm not saying this happened with you, Mark, but for those people who hunt, they know these deer are so good at camouflaging themselves and being so quiet. You know, you hear the squirrels and you think it's a deer and it's a squirrel. And then when you don't think it's a deer, it's a deer. I can't tell you how many times over the course of my hunting career, these things haunt you. They really do. I'll tell you two stories. One, about maybe 15 years ago, maybe more than that, I was in a deer stand, a different stand than I was in recently, like last weekend. And it was a rainy morning. I had mud on my boots, and I had a buck coming right toward me, and I was ready. I was kind of waiting for him. It was a big buck, and a piece of mud fell off my boot, hit the ground. The buck heard it and kind of, you know, saw me at that point, and he was gone. But the embarrassing story was from, I think it was 2 years ago, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, I was in this stand that I was in last weekend, and from behind me, I could see a buck, and it was coming, and it was a good buck, and it was coming right under my stand, right? So I felt no obligation to turn around. I'm like, this buck is going to give me just a perfect shot. I mean, it would have been perfect if I had a bow. It was that close. Walks right underneath the stand, is about, I wish I was making this up, guys, about 10 yards in front of me, and I missed the shot.
Oh!
Now, I've played this through my mind. I don't know how many times I angled the gun down from where I had a rest on the stand. And I guess just because of the close angle, I really don't know. I even took calls on this years ago of people trying to, you know, console me and tell me that it's happened to them. But it was frustrating, and I'll never forget that one. I will tell you that. So, and I'll be honest, last week I flat out missed my first shot. But, you know, they don't always move, and this deer did not. It kind of stood there for for a second shot, and that was very kind of him.
So was it? Did you need Kevin Costner from JFK to do the breakdown of how you missed that shot 3 years ago?
Well, yeah, basically. I mean, it's just, I honestly, I probably shouldn't even put the gun on the rest and just sort of point it. It would have been, you know, I don't know what happened. It will never, ever make sense to me.
What do you hunt with, Mark?
I hunt with a 30-06. Okay. Actually, that I won, I have a couple of 30-06. I used to have a 300 Win Mag years ago that I sold. I didn't feel like it's way too much gun for the tree stand in Missouri, but I went out west about 20 years ago. It's 20 years ago next year to hunt mule deer and elk in Durango, Colorado. And the gun that I have right now, that's a real nice gun, I won at an NRA banquet about 10 years ago. Yeah.
You mentioned that you kind of got grandfathered into this group of where you hunt and have been hunting for many years. Did you grow up in a hunting family, or did you have to learn it as an adult? Because I get a lot of questions from people saying, hey, you know, I've never hunted. My dad didn't hunt. My granddad didn't hunt. How do I learn how to hunt? So did you enter as a young boy hunter, or did you enter into the field as a man?
Well, it's a great question, and this is where I'll talk about my friend Kevin, because in the 80s, I was doing radio, morning radio in Columbia, Missouri, after I graduated, and I he was someone that I got to know, and we were fishing buddies. So he'd call me maybe 10:30, 11 in the morning and say, hey, can you get out on the ponds? And I said, I think I can. And I'd go up to Howard County, and we'd sit. Ironically, there was a few ponds that we would, I guess the word would be trespass on, and we would sneak over. And there was this guy named JB that had the property next to where Kevin's mom and dad was, and he'd hear the tractor, and he's like, oh, we got to go. So that's the property that he bought. That guy died, and Kevin bought that property, so it's all out there. But anyway, we were fishing, and then, honestly, I was on a talk show, my first talk show, talking about gun issues, and he said, well, why don't you come out and shoot? He invited me and my liberal partner, Simon Rose, who's still on the radio in Columbia, to shoot guns. I had never shot a gun. So I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago before I moved here when I was 14 to Baldwin, and never had experience with guns. But I love the outdoors, and I love fishing. And Kevin, you know, had me come out, shoot a, I don't even know what it was, something that didn't have a lot of kick, and I got used to it. And he said, all right, do you want to try? I said, yeah. Went out to a stand. My first year probably would have been like 92, 93. And I liked it. And the next year I got a buck, so I really liked it, and I haven't missed it since. So, yeah, it took me a while, and it was a learning process. Most people who know me are surprised just because I'm not known, I mentioned this earlier, I'm not known to be the most patient person in the world. But when I'm fishing or when I'm in the woods, I love it. It's really something that nice. I've really enjoyed over the years.
Well, yep. Mark Cox, you have a chance. Temperatures are down. The DeerCast app is on your phone.
I'm going again this weekend.
Well, you went duck hunting one more time. Too.
I did go duck hunting. Yeah, on the warmest day with no wind, and apparently the ducks don't move. So we saw, but we shot at a few. My son got one, but it wasn't a great day to duck hunt either. So
duck hunting is fun. You know, I've gotten away from the bird hunting a little bit only because of time, and you know, now I have my daughter, who, by the way, my daughter did go to deer camp, and she was on the production line, labeling the packages, loins, and tenderloin when we came through, because we that's another thing we do at this deer camp. We butcher all the deer ourselves. There's not a whole lot of things that I can do. I don't have a lot of skill, but believe it or not, I can skin a deer. I need a little help to get started at the top of the legs, but we, you know, we take the back straps out, and then I bring hind quarters and just have some sausage made. So, Mark, if you do get skunked, I will take care of you.
Hey, how about the non-hunter? I'm putting it out there. I'll take donations any day.
Thank you, Mark.
Is there a tradition? Do you bite the heart, bite the liver right at the shot spot?
Now, let me leave you with the most important thing about deer hunting, for me.
This
is just for me. Everybody else might have a different... there's no biting of the heart. There's none of that. But if I don't have a Gatorade bottle with me in the deer stand, then I'm in big trouble. Use your imagination on that.
I get it, sir. Hey, Mark Reardon, thank you, my friend. We appreciate you sharing your success story with us.
Thank you guys for having me. I really appreciate it. It's always fun to talk hunting and fishing.
Have a happy Thanksgiving too, Mark.
You too.
Yep, good stuff. Yeah, maybe that'll bring me luck. I mean, who knows, right?
Maybe you don't use the deer cast. Maybe that's the trick. Maybe you find yourself mysteriously on Grant's farm property. Might see something there.
Oh, that's true. Who knows? Hey, thanks. We're going to be back in just a minute with more Second Amendment Radio in the great outdoors.
Yeah, I'm going to get that 30-point buck. last thing I do, I'm going to get that 30-point buck.
There's a baseball theme. We're going to talk to Adam Wainwright coming up here in just a couple of minutes from the St. Louis Cardinals, talking about his hunting success among his many other successes. Before I do that, I just want to remind you, on my show here on 97.1 FM, I am spending the entire month supporting first responders, Bo, and we're raising money for Responder Rescue, which is a great organization. And they're doing a raffle through the Range St. Louis West. The Range has donated a Sig Sauer M400 Tread AR-style rifle with a Sig Sauer Green Dot optic on it, and a couple of magazines. It's worth about $1,400 or $1,500. You can buy a raffle ticket for $10. Our goal is to raise $20,000 for Responder Rescue.
Wasn't there a lower goal first?
I thought I'd only raise five or six. Goal. We've shattered it.
I think I predicted this.
So yes, you did.
I'm still selling tickets. On the 24th, we're going to draw a winner the day before Thanksgiving live on my Facebook page. You don't have to be present to win. Go to 971talk.com/firstresponders to find the link to buy raffle tickets. Please buy them. Thank you.
And you do need to pass the background check. Let's put that out there.
Range will handle all the paperwork.
No, I know. I'm just saying, hey, if you're a bad guy, don't be buying the raffle tickets. Anyway, it's deer hunting season, and there's a lot of things going on in the world right now, and it seems like Adam Wainwright is playing whack-a-mole because he's been hunting successfully, unlike MARC,
yes,
which is the new term for the old Indian word for bad hunter.
Yes, that's me.
But you are going to try this weekend.
I am.
And he's also been serving food. Let's start with your deer hunting story. Adam Wainwright, welcome to Second Amendment Radio on the Great Outdoors, man.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Appreciate it.
Where were you? What happened? What'd you do? Is it an epic story? Are you going to mount the head?
It's definitely going to get mounted. Definitely. Big, mature, 7.5-year-old Illinois whitetail, just a real trophy, just a giant 8-pointer, biggest 8-pointer I've ever seen in person.
Wow!
I think we scored it 156 and 4/8. Pretty big 8-point.
Is this something you've been watching? Is this one you've been watching for years?
So I was invited up to my friend Jim Tilmey's house farm, and he's got one of the best places in the country, and. When you get an invite like that, you got to go.
Yes,
and
you do.
So, you do. You just have to go. And this is how great this place is. I shot that deer and got it in the truck and got it back. And he looked at it and he said, "Man, that is the perfect management buck."
Wow.
You know. So that's how you know. That's the Midwest for you, though. You never know what's going to step out in front of you. It could be a little 3-year-old dink 8-pointer, or it could be a 195-inch 10. You never know. So yeah. That's what it's exciting, especially during the rut. You just never know.
Well, congratulations. The next question is, what did you get it with? Was it a curve or a fastball?
Definitely a fastball. Those Matthews bows are pretty special.
Yeah, he shot a bow. With a bow.
Yeah, a Matthews bow. It's not my company, but thank you. So can you describe where you were, how long you were out there? Because Mark here was in the stand for 4 hours, and then he did really well on his poker app that he was playing.
Yeah, but no deer.
Well, that's hunting, isn't it? I mean, if it'd just be called harvesting if it was different. But, you know, I've hunted the last, at least two seasons, I think three seasons now. Without a big, mature Midwest buck. And so, you know, sometimes that's the way it goes. Sometimes you run into a few of them a year, and sometimes you don't. When you're like me, though, you have five kids. What I'm usually hunting is those five kids. I'm usually hunting them all over the place. So my time in the woods has been sparing at best. So I was very fortunate to be able to get one on the dirt.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic. Well, we're so thrilled to hear it. I think I saw a picture of it online, and it's impressive.
I'm still hopeful. I'm going to go out this weekend and give it one more shot.
Literally.
Well, you're definitely not going to get one if you don't go.
That is a great point.
And I'm definitely not going to get one because I'm married to a vegetarian. But again, taking donations of venison because I am a carnivore. If you don't mind switching gears here, I had a headline here that said you were serving food to the community at the Ahmaud Arbery murder trial. Could you describe what's going on with that?
Yeah, we had so our community is a very tight knit community. I grew up, born and raised here in South Georgia, born in Brunswick, Georgia, where Ahmaud was shot, and there was some words said in the courtroom the other day that that caused Al Sharpton and a couple other leaders among the black community to say, "Hey, we need some more support down here." And 500, they said 500. They invited 500. I think we had way more than that. So it was just an opportunity for me to be the hands and feet of Jesus and get out there and serve people who are coming in with great intentions, who are coming in here and protesting peacefully, or coming in here just to make sure that the support is known. But one way or another, I wanted everyone to know, and our community to know, and our community wanted everyone to know that we were going to support and love anybody who came in here. So they had some people in there frying shrimp and boiling shrimp and frying fish and making some pulled pork barbecue, baked beans, coleslaw. We fed, I if there was one person there that was 750 at least, it was 2 hours of nonstop packed lines, and we fed them good, and they had a good time, and it was great to meet everyone and talk to them.
Well, good for you. I mean, I think that's fantastic. I'll have to tell you, Adam, 5, 6, 7 years ago, when you had a leg injury, I remember this specifically. We were at our church in the Chesterfield Valley, The Crossing, where I know Mike Matheny used to attend, and my son saw you there and held the door for you as you were leaving, and you thanked him, and that's been one of the highlights of his life. Can I just tell you that as a Cardinals fan, he still talks about seeing you at his church.
Well, I did appreciate him opening that door because I was a little hobbled at that time. And you never know. I might not have got out of there without him. So,
so as far as the feed goes, is this a one and done, or are you going to be going back to the community? And are you hearing conversations amongst the people outside the courthouse? Do you see a conversation happening? Because I think the more we talk, the more we can heal and understand.
That's right. And there's lots of incredible conversations going on. There's a lot of communication. There's a lot of bonding and spiritual healing going on. There's prayers left and right. Yesterday, it was just nonstop prayer. And that was what yesterday was all about, was getting together as humanity, white, black, Asian. I saw Mexican people. I saw many, many different colors and shapes and sizes. And we all came together under one umbrella of the Lord and prayed together, and that was a fantastic time of growth for me spiritually, I know, and for many other people too. And that's what we're trying to do, right? We're trying to promote healing for a community that was hurt, and that is hurt, and is confused, and so we're trying to get all on the same page, and I think it's going well.
Yeah, congratulations. Adam Wainwright, our guest. You know, Adam, congratulations as well on a fantastic season. I mean, what, 17 wins this year, is that right?
Well, 17 wins in a row.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the team, 17 wins in a row. I was talking about him personally.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, both of those are true. it was a good season. We really got it going towards the end. And I honestly believe if we beat the Dodgers, which we should have, I mean, by all accounts, we probably should have won that game. We had 10 or 11 runners in scoring position, and their pitchers held the fort down really well. And that's the way baseball goes sometimes. But if we get past them, I feel really good that we're going to go deep into October and probably win the whole World Series. That's the way the team is clicking. And that's what our expectations are, more than I've felt in a long time coming into this next year, because of the way we ended, the way that feeling was flowing through the clubhouse. Guys, a lot of guys felt for the first time like, oh man, we're gonna win this. Like, we're gonna really do it and believe it. And it's one thing to say it, and it's another thing to believe it. And I think guys were starting to believe it there at the end.
That's awesome. Yeah, that is awesome. And are you looking to working with Ollie as the new manager in the next year?
He's great. Yeah, I've become great friends with Ollie, and he has grown up in this game, played you know, up to the professional ball with the Cardinals. And then he's been – the good thing about – you know what? He's been in, like, pretty much every role as a coach or as a manager through right. the minor leagues and through the big leagues. He knows every side of it. He knows, you know, what players are thinking, because as a bench coach, you get a lot of guys coming to you. You're everyone's best friend because you're the guy that can make things happen and yeah. you're the go-between. And when you're the kind of the first base coach like he was for a while, then guys can feel like they can kind of come to you and vent without, you know, that getting back to the manager. And then, you know, when you become the manager, which he's done in the minor leagues also, when you become the manager, some of those things people may not have a great relationship with you, or maybe they don't feel comfortable doing because you're the one making the lineup card out. But he has a lot of really great relationships already from being in there. The continuity is great, and I think he's going to do a fantastic job.
Well, I tell you what, Adam Wainwright, it's been an honor talking to you. Congratulations on your hunting success and your baseball success. We appreciate you, my friend.
Thank you. I just got done playing a little music on the church stage here. I'm going to go back inside and see if I can't wrangle some more songs up.
All right. Have a great Thanksgiving, buddy, and keep spreading that word.
All right. See you guys.
All right. Adam Wainwright, outstanding. Great, great edition of Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors, Bo.
That's a full show, buddy. Well, happy Thanksgiving to you guys and to the listeners of Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. And while you're gathering with family, tell them about Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Well, you know why there's a baseball theme. We're going to talk to Adam Wainwright coming up here in just a couple of minutes from the St. Louis Cardinals, talking about his hunting success among his many other successes. Before I do that, I just want to remind you, on my show here on 97.1 FM, I am spending the entire month supporting first responders, Bo, and we're raising money for Responder Rescue, which is a great organization, and they're doing a raffle through the Range St. Louis West. The Range has donated a Sig Sauer M400 Tread AR style rifle with a Sig Sauer green dot optic on it and a couple of magazines. It's worth about $1,400 or $1,500. You can buy a raffle ticket for $10. Our goal is to raise $20,000 for Responder Rescue.
Wasn't there a lower goal first?
I thought I'd only raise five or six. Goal. We've shattered it.
I think I predicted this.
So yes, you did.
I'm still selling tickets. On the 24th, we're going to draw a winner the day before Thanksgiving live on my Facebook page. You don't have to be present to win. Go to 971talk.com/first responders to find the link to buy raffle tickets. Please buy them. Thank you.
And you do need to pass the background check. Let's put that out there.
Range will handle all the paperwork.
No, I know. I'm just saying, hey, if you're a bad guy, don't be buying the raffle tickets. Anyway, it's deer hunting season, and there's a lot of things going on in the world right now, and it seems like Adam Wainwright is playing whack-a-mole because he's been hunting successfully, unlike MARC,
yes.
Which is the new term for the old Indian word for bad hunter.
Yes, that's me.
But you are going to try this weekend.
I am.
And he's also been serving food. Let's start with your deer hunting story. Adam Wainwright, welcome to Second Amendment Radio on the Great Outdoors, man.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Appreciate it.
Where were you? What happened? What'd you do? Is it an epic story? Are you going to mount the head?
It's definitely going to get mounted. Definitely. Big, mature, 7.5-year-old Illinois whitetail, just a real trophy, just a giant 8-pointer, biggest 8-pointer I've ever seen in person.
Wow!
I think we scored it 156 and 4.8. Pretty big 8-point.
Is this something you've been watching? Is this one you've been watching for years?
So I was invited up to my friend Jim Tilmy's house farm, and he's got one of the best places in the country, and. When you get an invite like that, you got to go.
Yes, you do.
You do. You just have to go. And this is how great this place is. I shot that deer and got it in the truck and got it back, and he looked at it and he said, "Man, that is the perfect management buck."
Wow.
You know. So that's how you know. That's the Midwest for you, though. You never know what's going to step out in front of you. It could be a little 3-year-old dink 8-pointer, or it could be a 195-inch 10. You never know. So yeah. That's what it's exciting, especially during the rut. You just never know.
Well, congratulations. The next question is, what did you get it with? Was it a curve or a fastball?
Definitely a fastball. Those Matthews bows are pretty special.
Yeah, he shot at bow. With a bow.
Yeah, a Matthews bow. It's not my company, but thank you. So can you describe where you were, how long you were out there? Because Mark here was in the stand for 4 hours, and then he did really well on his poker app that he was playing.
Yeah, but no deer.
Well, that's hunting, isn't it? I mean, if this be called harvesting if it was different. But, you know, I've hunted the last, at least two seasons, I think three seasons now. Without a big, mature Midwest buck. And so, you know, sometimes that's the way it goes. Sometimes you run into a few of them a year, and sometimes you don't. When you're like me, though, you have five kids. What I'm usually hunting is those five kids. I'm usually hunting them all over the place. So my time in the woods has been sparing at best. So I was very fortunate to be able to get one on the dirt.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic. Well, we're so thrilled to hear it. I think I saw a picture of it online, and it's impressive. I'm still hopeful. I'm going to go out this weekend and give it one more shot.
Literally.
Well, you're definitely not going to get one if you don't go.
That is a great point.
And I'm definitely not going to get one because I'm married to a vegetarian. But again, taking donations of venison because I am a carnivore. You know, if you don't mind switching gears here, I had a headline here that said you were serving food to the community at the Ahmaud Arbery murder trial. Could you describe what's going on with that?
Yeah, we had so our community is a very tight-knit community. I grew up born and raised here in South Georgia, born in Brunswick, Georgia, where Ahmaud was shot. And there was some words said in the courtroom the other day that that caused Al Sharpton and a couple other leaders among the black community to say, hey, we need some more support down here. And 500, they said 500. They invited 500. I think we had way more than that. So it was just an opportunity for me to be the hands and feet of Jesus and get out there and serve people who are coming in with great intentions, who are coming in here and protesting peacefully or coming in here just to make sure that the support is known. But one way or another, I wanted everyone to know and our community to know, and our community wanted everyone to know that we were going to support and love anybody who came in here. So they had some people in there frying shrimp and boiling shrimp and frying fish and making some pulled pork barbecue, baked beans, coleslaw. We fed, if there was one person there that was 750 at least, it was 2 hours of nonstop packed lines, and we fed them good and they had a good time, and it was great to meet everyone and talk to them.
Well, good for you. I mean, I think that's fantastic. I'll have to tell you, Adam, 5, 6, 7 years ago, when you had a leg injury, I remember this specifically. We were at our church in the Chesterfield Valley, The Crossing, where I know Mike Matheny used to attend, and my son saw you there and held the door for you as you were leaving, and you thanked him, and that's been one of the highlights of his life. Can I just tell you that as a Cardinals fan, he still talks about seeing you at his church.
Well, I did appreciate him opening that door because I was a little hobbled at that time. And you never know. I might not have got out of there without him.
So as far as the feed goes, is this a one and done, or are you going to be going back to the community? And are you hearing conversations amongst the people outside the courthouse? Do you see a conversation happening? Because I think the more we talk, the more we can heal and understand.
That's right. And there's lots of incredible conversations going on. There's a lot of communication. There's a lot of bonding and spiritual healing going on. There's prayers left and right. Yesterday it was just nonstop prayer. And that was what yesterday was all about, was getting together as humanity, white, black, Asian. I saw Mexican people. I saw many, many different colors and shapes and sizes. And we all came together under one umbrella of the Lord and prayed together, and that was a fantastic time of growth for me spiritually, I know, and for many other people too. And that's what we're trying to do, right? We're trying to promote healing for a community that was hurt, and that is hurt, and is confused, and so we're trying to get all on the same page, and I think it's going well.
Yeah, congratulations. Adam Wainwright, our guest. You know, Adam, congratulations as well on a fantastic season. I mean, what, 17 wins this year, is that right?
Well, 17 wins in a row.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the team, 17 wins in a row. I was talking about him personally.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, both of those are true. It was a good season. We
you know, we really got it going towards the end. And I honestly believe if we beat the Dodgers, which we should have, I mean, by all accounts, we probably should have won that game. We had 10 or 11 runners in scoring position, and their pitchers held the fort down really well. And that's the way baseball goes sometimes. But if we get past them, I feel really good that we're going to go deep into October and probably win the whole World Series. That's the way the team was clicking. And that's what our expectations are, more than I've felt in a long time coming into this next year, because of the way we ended, the way that feeling was flowing through the clubhouse. Guys, a lot of guys felt for the first time like, oh man, we're going to win this. Like, we're going to really do it and believe it. And it's one thing to say it, and it's another thing to believe it. And I think guys were starting to believe it there at the end.
That's awesome. Yeah, that is awesome. And are you looking to working with Ollie as the new manager in the next year?
He's great. Yeah, I've become great friends with Ollie, and he has grown up in this game, played, you know, up to the professional ball with the Cardinals, and then he's been, the good thing about it, you know what, he's been in like pretty much every role as a coach or as a manager through the minor leagues and through the big leagues. He knows every side of it. He knows, you know, what players are thinking, because as a bench coach, you get a lot of guys coming to you. You're everyone's best friend because you're the guy that can make things happen, and you're the go-between. And when you're the kind of the first base coach like he was for a while, then guys can feel like they can kind of come to you and vent without, you know, that getting back to the manager. And then, you know, when you become the manager, which he's done in the minor leagues also, when you become the manager, some of those things, people may not have a great relationship with you, or maybe they don't feel comfortable doing because you're the one making the lineup card out. But he has a lot of really great relationships already from being in there. The continuity is great, and I think he's going to do a fantastic job.
Well, I tell you what, Adam Wainwright's been an honor talking to you. Congratulations on your hunting success and your baseball success. We appreciate you, my friend.
Thank you. I just got done playing a little music on the church stage here. I'm going to go back inside and see if I can't wrangle some more songs up.
All right. Have a great Thanksgiving, buddy, and keep spreading that word.
All right. See you guys.
All right. Adam Wainwright, outstanding. Great, great edition of Second Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors, Bo.
That's a full show, buddy. Well, happy Thanksgiving to you guys and to the listeners of Second Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors. And while you're gathering with family, tell them about Second Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors.
Get more at 971talk.com.